The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, everybody.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm great. It is the middle of June, and there is too much to talk about.
That's right.
Too much.
Savor it.
You're absolutely right. It's 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, they're going to be Mondays. We roll in here like, what are we talking about?
What are we doing? On the show today, Matt Grissom talked college baseball with us. We'll, of course, talk NBA Finals as well. On the show with Raheem Palmer from The Ringer. Hey, Raheem's on the show today. Wes Reynolds, co-host of Long Shots. We'll talk U.S. Open with him. His Indiana Pacers after they, can I use the word gacked? They gacked the spread for sure. They gacked the game too, maybe. Maybe that's harsh. Anyway, maybe they gacked the whole thing on Friday night. We'll talk to Wes about the Pacers. And then Paul Sporer on baseball a little later on because obviously massive, I don't want to even say a massive trade, a heist in baseball took place. Let's do a little sports talk radio at some point in the show and compare the basketball trade to the baseball trade yesterday.
Okay.
Which was worse? That'll be the question. And by the way, which of the two has betting implications? I'm talking about Rafael Devers going to the Giants in baseball, which is massive for those of us who are Giants fans. And then, of course, the Desmond Bane trade in the NBA. We'll get to both of those, but we got to start with golf, where J.J. Spawn, we pick up where we left off on Friday. Well, we were on air Friday, it was Thursday morning when it first started, I guess. But J.J. Spawn was in the lead both of those mornings. He hadn't teed off yet on Friday. He was at 4-under at the time. Then, of course, a roller coaster of a weekend, including then starting yesterday where Spawn, he has a 5 on the first 5 holes of the round yesterday at Oakmont. He bogeys 5 of the first 6 holes to fall at that point to 2 over par. And it looked like when you have that run of holes, 5 or 6 in a row there at the beginning of the round, you figure you can bounce back from that. And the answer is yes, he does. And he wins the United States Open as a pre-flop anywhere, depending on where you got this. If you are one of the human beings who got this, I don't know how many did, but pre-flop anywhere from between 120 to 1 to 150 to 1 to win this tournament. He wins his first major. He does so by being the only person under par in the end, 1 under. You know how that went on the 18th hole. It took a 64.5-foot putt to get under par, but he does so 2-stroke lead over Robert McIntyre, who finished 1 over, and then a 3-stroke lead over Victor Hovland, who sort of didn't have himself a day yesterday, sort of was choppy throughout his day. It was a fourth round, a final round that was interrupted by a monsoon at Oakmont. But really, the greatness for Spawn began on the 12th hole, where he sunk a 40-foot birdie putt to get to 1 over par and 1 back. Then he had a great tee shot on 13. He had to settle for par there. But at 14, while this is going on, Sam Burns, no one was affected more by the weather than Sam Burns was. Burns lipped a par putt at 12. Then at 14, Spawn sinks a birdie putt to take the lead at even. But at 15, he drived it into the slop, hit a horrible second shot. He ended up bogeying 14. But at 14 did he end up? Yeah, he ends up bogeying 14 and then he birdies 15. He ends up birding 17, which is really the moment of the tournament was when McIntyre got to 1 over par at 17. He ends up parring 18 to finish 1 over, leader in the clubhouse, if you will. But at 17, there he is, J.J. Spawn on the tee, needing the drive of his life, and boy, did he get it. He drives the green, has an eagle putt, misses that, but makes the short birdie putt. And then at 18, of course, the 64-foot, 5-inch putt, where he needed a 2-putt, right, to win the tournament. That was the situation. He did a 2-putt to win the tournament because McIntyre's in the clubhouse waiting 1 over. Hatton had already, hacked up the 18th hole, so he wasn't going to get there. But instead of getting the 2-putt, he makes the putt. And you could almost see it, Kelly, on the face of, you saw them in action. Hatton being interviewed at the moment, who was upset with himself after what he did on 18 down the stretch. He goes, unbelievable. watching that. And then McIntyre is waiting for him in the clubhouse to see if we're going to have a playoff tomorrow, today, meaning tomorrow, yesterday. Just has to clap when he sinks the putt, when J.J. Spaun sinks the putt. And what an absolutely spectacular final round of the U.S. Open. You did not have J.J., I assume.
No, I did not. Yeah. I'm still waiting for that first text message or tweet, too, with anybody with an outright ticket on J.J. Spaun. You know, we talked about it, though, on Friday. It was the differences between J.J. Spaun and some of those other no-names at the top of the leaderboard. Good for Spaun. He's a good player. He's been on the PGA Tour for a little while now. He's had some good finishes this year, and this is by far his best and one that will live on in his memory forever. That's for sure.
For sure. Wes Reynolds will have more to say about this. Let me just ask you this, because my buddy Tommy in D.C. texted this, and he's a casual golf fan. We talked about, and I've talked about many times, I love the U.S. Open. I love carnage on a golf course. That is what the U.S. Open is supposed to be, because golf has the increase of tournaments where someone wins 20 under par or better has increased over the years, right? Like, it's definitely like a thing now that's not an anomaly. So I wait for the U.S. Open. And this one, obviously, with the weather, you know, it didn't, the rain didn't make it any easier on guys. You had, you know, Burns was like, do I have to shoot this? If you're going to stop playing, I don't want to hit this ball. And it really affected him. Scheffler had a moment where he's like, if you're going to stop playing, I don't want to hit this ball. And it really affected guys. By the way, I do think that if it went to a fifth round or a sixth round, if golf was a five round or six round event, Scottie Scheffler would have won this at four over par. Everybody would have fallen back to him.
Yeah, Scheffler and Rahm sitting right there. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Rahm was hot on Sunday as well.
Scheffler and Rahm, 4 over T7. You won't see that very often.
Yeah.
But my buddy Tommy, yeah, he goes, have you ever seen more golfers mad at the course in one round of golf? And I think his implication was, like, is this good? And my thing was, I get it, but I still love it.
So it's really tough, because I think, first of all, VSiN.com, I was chuckling this morning reading the post-tournament thoughts that were up there from Matt Eumanns and Matt Brown, because from a betting standpoint, I think it's very, very difficult when you get a tournament that's set up like this. And it is just, the course is so difficult that it starts to feel like you're throwing darts at what golfers are going to survive.
I completely felt that way.
Now, it is very hard for me to sit here, though, Gil, because we've talked about this a lot. You know how I feel about all the birdie fests, too. There's too many of them. So it is a little hypocritical of me and some of us to sit here and say, well, we can't have this, but I don't want this either. So, I mean, I think overall, the PGA Tour and golf and the majors need to just get closer to the middle. I don't really want to watch that for a U.S. Open. I know we like the tough tests of the U.S. Open, but you can have tough tests at U.S. Opens where you've had more than one guy under par. You know what I mean? We can have a winning score at 5, 6, 7 under in a more playable course that doesn't require so much, I think, luck out of some of these guys. There's that, but it is what it is. Look, it was not a winning tournament for me. I think it was a tournament I'm a bit upset with myself about. And look, I actually got bailed out. I thought it was going to be a really ugly tournament. Rahm sneaking into backdooring a top 10 finish for me, and Xander finishing top 20 were huge for me. Yeah. Still a small losing tournament this week. But, every week when I go handicap golf, what I try to do afterwards is make notes, right, about the courses, about the tournaments, for when I circle back in years later, and then especially the next year, is there anything I'm forgetting, right? And the majors, outside of the Masters, it's tough to do too much of that with, because you have a rotation of courses. Now, with the U.S. Open, though, the one I'm mad at myself with is the U.S. Open has become this now. It's become pure carnage. We want pure carnage. That's what they give us every time that we play this, basically every year now. And it's, look, I think I didn't emphasize enough last week on long shots who were on this show. Dial back your betting size. It's fine to have bets going, but you need to dial back how much you're betting, because it is just becomes chaos almost every year at this point. It's going to be the same thing next year as well. I think that's big. I bet one missed the cut parlay. Should have bet more of those. Like, this is the tournament that you bet these at because of the tough conditions. And I only bet one. I should have bet, you know, different iterations of 2, 3, 4. So I'm a little upset with myself. It was not the best bet tournament of the year for me. I think the handicapping was fine, because I don't think there's much you can take away from this going forward. We have a signature event.
Agree.
This week with the Travelers Championship. And guess what? The odds makers aren't taking much away from this tournament, because the top of the odds boards sure looks a whole lot like it's looked like in weeks past before this tournament. So
a tournament where Rory McIlroy shot 7 over and gets a T20.
Yeah. I mean,
it's amazing. No, I do think within what you were saying there is the finest point of all of this, which is this was, from a betting standpoint, right? All the, you know, happiness for JJ Spawn and anybody who might have had him in the world, just from a fan standpoint, good for him. He wins his first major. But from a betting standpoint, this was an exercise distilled. This was an exercise in discipline.
Yeah.
This is the biggest event on a day where there was no NBA and there was no NHL and baseball was just doing its normal thing on any given day, besides the trade, obviously. This was front and center, the only thing going pretty much, right? Besides baseball and WNBA. But you get the idea. And so your whole thing was, okay, I mean, I have to make a bet on this, right? But if you were really truthful with yourself, was there any way to have any conviction on any one of these guys over the rest of the field?
No, because even the final round, Gil, even the final, like, I admittedly, and like, I didn't bet these guys. I bet Victor Hovland live top 10 after the first round. We talked about that on Friday. Sam Burns was a top 10 rated guy in my model this week. I stayed away from him. Okay, Burns would have made sense. Victor Hovland, top 15 in my model this week. Okay, maybe it would have made sense if those two got home. But in the end, no, it's JJ Spawn. And it's just it's not an outright ticket that I would have ever considered. I did not bet, and I have not seen many people making victory laps this morning about it.
Was still awesome to watch, though.
It was awesome to watch. Yeah. It was awesome to watch. And I was a lot happier when I did my final calculations this morning, Gil, that I didn't lose as much as I thought.
I can't believe they played through at one point.
I can't believe it got done. Yeah. I can't believe we're sitting here today not talking about golf still being played today.
Let's compare a trade, NBA versus MLB, and the betting implications of them, if there are, for both next.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. What a busy Ides of June. I know it's the day after the Ides of June. It's the 16th. But what a busy mid-June kind of day this is. With the U.S. Open having taken place, obviously the final round yesterday, a tremendous win by J.J. Spawn. Obviously the NBA Finals tonight, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, going to Game 6 with Florida up 3-2 and having the ball on their racket, the puck on their racket, mixing metaphors.
Yeah.
For Game 6, Edmonton with this just complete meh performance in Game 5.
Yeah.
Then we talked about the two trades, right, in football and baseball. Wes Reynolds standing by to talk with us about golf and the NBA. And, of course, Paul Sporer on Major League Baseball coming up. Steve Fezzik has texted in. We get text and tweets. Fezzik saying, and I love this, he said, this is Fezzik talking about the Giants, where he says, Giants preflop season win total was 79.5. The San Francisco Giants, if there's one team in the markets that have consistently been undervalued over the past few years, it's the Giants Magic Team. Yes, it is.
The Steelers of Major League Baseball.
That's the other thing that you have to factor in when you're considering all those Giants bets, is Giants Magic. You really do have to factor that in.
Yeah, you really do.
Sam Ginsberg, sons of friends of mine. Oh, that's the Coastal Carolina one. We already talked about that. Chris Heath, what's the catch with this free money for gas app? Don't trust it. I'll just be late for the concert. This is related to one of our many, often, how could I put this, frequently run commercials where the girl goes to the other girl. She goes, girl, we're going to be late for the concert because you're trying to get cheaper gas. That's a great commercial. Scotty B726, who has to be, with apologies to Wes Reynolds, has to be the biggest Pacers fan in the world, or at least he's the angriest Pacers fan in the world. He says the OKC win is tarnished. Raheem saying the Pacers missing threes is an excuse doesn't change the Foster effect. But everybody that likes OKC, I guess, is automatically right.
Scott Foster was Scott Foster, though. Like, I'm not going to say like he
the extender,
like he had an impact, but it was like it was all over the place. Scott Foster drives me nuts because what do we always say about refs? Just be consistent. There was nothing consistent in that game.
No.
From a refereeing standpoint, it was let's stop the game. I want some attention. Let me go to the monitor and figure this one out. And then, like, he'd call something that you were like, wait, what? How's that a flagrant? How's that not a flagrant? What are we talking about?
Last one here, Jesse Welch. Don't worry about us Red Sox fans, Gil. We're still holding on to those great memories of that 2-year stretch of Alex Verdugo, because that's legitimately all we ended up getting from Mookie Betts. Let's bring in Wes Reynolds, because there's tons to talk about here. Wes joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, part of the glue that holds this entire operation together. Wes Reynolds 1, that's the number 1. That's where you can follow him on Twitter. Wes, wearing the old Pacers shirt. How you doing, man? Good morning.
I'm doing well, Gil. Eagerly anticipating game number 5. You were talking about Scotty B there on the Twitter. Scotty B sounded like about 18,000 other people that I exited Gainbridge Fieldhouse with on Friday night, who were not very happy with Scott Foster.
Not very happy with Scott Foster. I mean, there was possessions where like the OKC was pushing off like 3 different times. I'm like, how is this going uncalled? Obviously, the SGA travel that was uncalled. But I just want to. For those of us who had the Pacers plus the points, can I just go through the last part of this? And, Wes, you can react to it.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's 86-76 late in the third quarter. McConnell misses a 15-footer. Toppin misses 2 free throws. Siakam misses a 16-footer. Siakam misses a 20-footer. OKC scores. Siakam makes 1 of 2, and OKC scores. So it's only a 7-point lead at the end of the third quarter. It should have been like 14. That's the first thing. Then the fourth quarter, right, OKC finally ties it up at 89 apiece. Then they take the lead 104-103 with 2:21 left. First lead since it was 55-53 after Shea scored 7 in a row. Then Dort steals it from Thunder. Dort steals it from Turner, pardon me. At 105-103 with under 2 minutes, Halliburton misses a 3. Williams misses a 3. Nembhard misses a 21-footer. Nesmith fouls Shea with 44 seconds left. He makes both 107-103. Remember, the spread is 6 or 6.5. Turner misses a 3 with 28 seconds left, but they get the rebound. Holmgren fouls Mathurin. He misses 2 free throws. OKC rebound, timeout. Mathurin fouls before the inbounds. Oh, God. SGA hits the free throw because it's before the inbounds pass. They get the ball. They're up 108-103. Halliburton steals it from Caruso. So you're like, oh, wait, maybe they will cover. Mathurin fouled by Williams. He makes 1 of 2 to make it 108-104. Mathurin fouls before the inbounds. SGA makes both free throws, 109. Makes the free throw 109-104, then Nembhard fouls him 111-104 because he makes both, and then Halliburton chucks up the 39-footer.
And just one of the
my God.
For those of you guys with the Pacers tickets, that was brutal. That was brutal. And Benedict Mathurin, Wes, I already know that like in 2 years from now, when you're like, hey, Kelly, who is your top 5 favorite NBA players? I know Benedict Mathurin's going to be in there because he's quickly becoming like the old J.R. Smith of the NBA. Like, he's either the GOAT or the GOAT, right? Like, he's either like amazing or does that stuff at the end of the
game. So, Wes, the question is, really stupid of him, or you kind of understand it because they did need a steal?
I think it was kind of like right there in the moment, and you're just reacting. You're like, okay, now the sense of urgency is kicked in now that we're down for almost the first time in the game. So yeah, just maybe a brain cramp. But what we were saying about the Foster calls, you got to also tie that in to the fact that the Pacers got stagnant offensively. And part of that is what Oklahoma City did defensively in terms of the fact that they took that double like stack screen that they like to run for Halliburton. They took that away. They switched everything. And the Pacers, I think, got caught in that two-man game, that little two-man pick-and-roll game with Halliburton and Miles Turner. And Miles has not had a very good series, at least from an offensive standpoint. And Pascal Siakam is just right there in the corner still waiting for the ball. And it's got to be Pascal, because that's where they were so effective in game 3, I think, offensively, is they have Nesmith in one corner, Pascal Siakam in the other corner. So they're in what are called the dunker spots, because they're there for those backdoor cuts, and they were getting those all night long in game number 3, because Halliburton and Nembhard, TJ McConnell as well in the second unit minutes, they were driving the paint and getting to the rim. So that leaves that open for Toppin and Siakam and Nesmith to have those backdoor cuts and get those buckets in the paint. I think they scored 60 points in the paint in game number 3. And I think the Pacers got a little bit away from that in the final few minutes in the fourth quarter. And that's really what did them in.
Are we going to look back at that whole sequence I just talked about from end of third quarter to end of game as the difference in this as to who wins the NBA championship?
Look, the market certainly thinks so, but I'm not sure about that. I just think you have adjustments in these series. You know, what you did one game before, you aren't as effective in the next game, because you have two very good coaches, I think, with Mark Daniel and Rick Carlisle. So they're going to be smart and look at this film and make these adjustments. And I thought the Thunder did a very good job of of taking things away, and there's weren't able to mismatches that they had in game number three, because the guy that has the most mismatches, I think, in this series is Pascal Siakam, because there's sometimes he gets on Shea, who is smaller than Pascal Siakam, so that's a mismatch. And then where Pascal gets a bigger guy like Hartenstein, that's a mismatch in the Pacers' favor. So, you know, they just weren't able, they got that taken away, and there was just a lot of dribbling. You know, I hate to be kind of rudimentary in the analysis here, but it just felt like the Pacers were dribble forever and not drive to the basket and not quick and decisive. And quick and decisive is how Indiana wins games in this series. It's not an accident that they've won 14 games in the NBA playoffs this postseason. So that could be, Gil, but I think the Pacers got a little bit more fight in them. I know the conventional wisdom in the mainstream media, not that they're ever wrong, is that
what?
This series is a wrap. This is over. It's all over. This series is a wrap. You know, the Pacers, you know, they just blew it. Maybe that'll turn out to be true, but I don't think so. I think the Pacers got a couple punches left in them.
What do you do with tonight's game? They're catching 9.5, are the Pacers, and it's 224.5 now. Consensus, this total is a little muted from what it was in previous games.
Yeah, it is. You're right, Gil. It is. I'm trying to figure out how to play this, because I do think you're getting the discount now, because these games have gone on, these games have gone under. But we know 2-2 in game five historically is a really good situation for an under, because it is the pivotal game, at the risk of sounding like Magic Johnson with his tweets. This is the pivotal game of the series. Well, you don't say. It's 2-2 in game number five.
Thanks, Magic.
Exactly. On the cutting edge of great basketball analysis. But so I don't know what I'm going to do with the total. What I think on the side is I'm going to do a little bit of a split here. I'll take the first half with the Pacers. That is now up to 6, and I think even 6.5
wow.
at one national store.
Oh, man.
Where you take juice on the Pacers side, and then 9.5. So I'll probably go half and half on the side here with the Pacers, because I'm not willing to count them out. I think going back to the 3 days in between actually helps a team that had a devastating loss that feels like they had one get away. So, you know, it certainly helped the Thunder in game number two when that happened. And maybe that helps the Pacers tonight in game number five.
Yeah. Game six is Thursday back in Indiana. Game seven, if necessary, back in OKC on Sunday, correct? Sunday would be
yep.
the game.
Yep. Thursday, Sunday. Yep.
Are we going to 7, Wes?
I believe we are, Gil. I think the Pacers, if they don't win tonight, I think that they're going to get game six on Thursday. I just this team consistently gets discounted. I think that, these guys are over. And look, they don't have the best player, and the team that has the best player in the series more often than not wins the series. So I do think that they are going to take this 7. And unfortunately, I can't make it back for game six on Thursday. So I said goodbye to Indianapolis last night saying I'll see you for the parade. So I'm trying to be positive about my team. And of course, I'm getting flack for that. It's like, no, I'm just going to be a negative about him and say, they're going to lose.
Cut to a shot of Wes on a float in the middle of the parade in Indianapolis. Pardon me. Win or lose in this NBA Finals, power rank the Pacers pre-flop next year Eastern Conference, obviously pre-draft as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they're you know, with the Tatum injury, you certainly have to have them ahead of Boston. I would probably have them second, but we'll see. Herb Simon, you know, is 90 years old, and they're going to go for it. I think they're going to beat the Tax this offseason.
Just clarifying, second to Cleveland?
Yes.
Second to Cleveland. Okay. Let's talk some golf. U.S. Open yesterday. Wes has thoughts abounding. Coming up, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
If you're into futures wagering, fantasy, or just like the thrill of calling your shot, you need to check out xcuta.com. That's X-C-U-T-T-A. And it's basically the future of how we play. Think of it like combining a live auction with the strategy of sports betting. You choose who you want to bid on, players, teams, golfers, even horse racing. Over 1,000 athletes and teams to choose from across every major sport. You set the terms, build your own auction, and invite your friends to play. You can even start auctions for free. It's like creating your own mini sports book with your crew. Here's the hookup. Email support@xcuta.com. Mention VSiN, and they'll send you a special 3-month player promo code to get started. If you mention Kelly Bidlin, it's still a 3-month free trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's xcutta.com, X-C-U-T-T-A. Futures wagering just got a serious upgrade. Skill Alexander, by the way, Trip Tepper, thank you on Twitter, pointing out that Marco Mira actually won two majors, won a Masters and a British Open, as we used to call it, not the Open Championship. We used to call it the British Open. If you say the British Open over there, they go crazy. Like, what?
Yeah, we ain't over there, so you can say either way here.
His pro career was very solid, and he was an elite amateur player as well, Trip adds. So, yes, Marco Mira with two majors to his name. Let's talk some baseball. Paul Spohr joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He joins us from Austin, Texas. You can follow him on Twitter at Spohr. And, of course, he's got the Sleeper in the Bust podcast. He's at FanGraphs. He does it all. A baseball life. How you doing, Paul?
Guys, I'm doing well. I mentioned Kelly on XCutta, and they banned my account.
So, yeah.
So tough. Maybe don't use it. Yeah.
That's right. Moments.
Right.
Mention VSiN to get a 3-month promo code, but if you mention Kelly, nothing extra. It's interesting. No respect. All right. You know where I'm going to start here, Paul? Yesterday, yes. Blockbuster trade. Boston Red Sox, the franchise that traded Mookie Betts and lost Xander Bogaerts in free agency, and now a disgruntled and a apparently irreconcilable issue with Devers, where he didn't want to play, you know, he didn't want to leave third base, then he didn't want to DH, but he said, all right, fine, I'll leave third base, I'll DH. Then he didn't want to play first base when they asked him to. You told me I wasn't going to use my glove this year. I don't want to play first base.
Right.
And then John Henry, the owner, tried to meet him in Kansas City to talk about it all. That didn't go well. Some reports that Devers didn't respond to text or the meeting didn't go well, whatever it was, it didn't go well. But the Red Sox had won 8 of 10. They were looking good. They swept the Yankees and didn't matter. Goodbye, Devers. He goes to the Giants. The interesting part, of course, is that they didn't get anything for him. If you consider Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks to be nothing, which I kind of do as a Giants guy, plus two prospects as well. My question to you is, where does this rank in the all-time heists?
Well, it actually doesn't really come close to the Mookie one, because I'd venture to say that they did get something here, given that you have to account for the money too, right? The fact that the Giants are taking the money really brings down the bar of what you're going to get with it, because the real benefit here is getting out from under a long-term contract like that. So that takes the burden off the team acquiring him, the Giants in this case, in terms of what they have to give back. But they get back, you know, a really compelling arm with Harrison. I'm not a huge Hicks guy. I'm really a Hicks is a bullpen guy and bullpen only. One thing I will say, Boston's pitching development is, you know, among the higher ends on the team, and so among the league, excuse me. So maybe they have something in mind that they can kind of get the best out of Hicks. But I think Harrison is the potential gem here, and a couple prospects, Jose Bello and James Tibbs III. Neither a blockbuster prospect, but you know, they got something here. They didn't just get out from under the money, which is what they did with the Betts deal, because they included David Price with it. You know, Verdugo was a known name, and maybe that's why that one felt better for some folks, is because people knew Verdugo. But no, they got way worse in the Betts deal, especially when you consider the talent. I think Boston actually did okay here, and then I like it for San Francisco because it's just like another free agent signing, and they've been trying to make moves recent years, and they, you know, I don't want to say they've come up short, but obviously they didn't get judged. They haven't been getting the top dog. And I know Adames hasn't been good, but I still like him long-term. They got Chapman, and now they bring in Devers. Obviously, if Devers was against first base and DH, though, this isn't the best spot for him, because he's playing first base all the way here, or DH. Like, so he's going to have to get used to that. Clearly, the well was poisoned in Boston, though. And it was, like you said, irreconcilable, which I'm surprised that I didn't necessarily think it was. I thought there was some bluster early on. I thought they had smoothed things out. Devers was playing well, so I thought that was good to go. But no, here we are, and we get this massive deal in mid-June, which you don't usually see in baseball.
I mentioned the money earlier. So you're right. The Giants do now take on the full extent of the remaining 9 years and $266.5 million left on Devers' original deal, which was 10 years, 313. So that's all the Giants. The other thing I point out, and this is the part that you don't hear in the mainstream, right, as much. And I mentioned this. So the last time a big player exchanged between Boston and San Francisco, Pablo Sandoval, 3-time World Series champ, went over to Boston. And I remember at the time saying, I was like, this is bad for Boston, because they clearly don't understand ballpark factor. Sandoval sprays. Right. It's not going to work at Fenway. And it didn't, by the way. It did not work. This is, that I concede this point as a Giants guy, right? I concede this point. This is, all right, for as well as Devers does, a lot of his shots are oppo, right? Oppo power that go off the monster, right? Those are going to turn into a lot of outs in San Francisco as well. So there is a scenario where this is not quite as awesome as we're making it out to be. You would agree?
Yeah, I do think getting a left-hander is something that Giants fans, you want to temper your expectations just in general. There's a reason that the two big free agents that they signed were right-handers with Adames and Chapman. And the other mega free agent that they went after in recent years was a right-hander in Aaron Judge, because it is tougher for lefties. Of course, we think about splash hits and how great those are, you know, obviously, but those are still pretty rare. And I know Devers is somebody who can do them. Don't be surprised if he pops a few, water shots this year in San Francisco. But the bottom line is the home run park factor for lefties in San Francisco the last 3 years is second worst in the league, mm-hmm. behind only Kauffman Stadium. So, you know, can he transition? Can he lean more into some of the batting average aspects that we've seen from him? Like you pointed out with Devers, though, that's come from beating, the Green Monster and ripping doubles and singles off of there. And now those are lazy flyouts if they don't reach the wall in right field in San Francisco. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic. Does he become more of like a 260, low 20s home run hitter? That's not as special as 270s and 30 bombs. So it does remain to be seen what they have here with Devers. Interesting move for the Giants. I don't hate it, but it does remain to be seen how well it's going to go given the park.
All right, you must make one of these bets. Ready for this?
Okay.
All right, you must make one of these bets. All of these, I'm going to give you 6 Giants potential bets and 1 Red Sox bet. Giants to win the World Series 22-1. To win the pennant 12-1, to win the division 7-1, to make the playoffs -170, to win 90 games even money 40-1 best record in baseball. Red Sox +170 to make the playoffs. You must make one of these bets. What do you make?
Okay, if I must make one, I think I'm going to take the Sox to make the playoffs.
Sox
plus 170. Because they're in that. Yeah. Yeah, they're in that jumbled mess, and obviously he is a loss. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Devers isn't a loss for them, because remember, he started off slow, and everyone's like, it's all the offseason stuff carrying over. This is going to be a nightmare year, and then he was like the dialed-in best hitter in baseball for a while, and he's smoothed out to be like very good. He has a 148 WRC plus right now with 15 bombs, does Devers. So it's a loss for them. But I do think it's replaceable. I think they're going to continue, and now they can kind of use this as a way to say, let's go out and get more talent, because we got this money off the books. They can go out and make a bigger trade for an offensive piece that they're more comfortable with. And I think that their pitching is obviously helped by getting Harrison and Hicks. So yeah, I'm going to go Red Sox there. I still believe in this team. They've got enough talent here, even though they've lost some guys due to injury and now the Devers trade. I think they can get there.
Yeah, Red Sox, by the way, big dogs tonight in Major League Baseball at Seattle. Are they tonight? Yes, I believe they're at Seattle.
Yes. Yes.
What about DFS today? What would you +162 dogs, by the way, at Seattle? What would you do DFS wise today?
I'm a little surprised that they're that big of dogs. I know Giolito hasn't been amazing, but when he's been good, he's been really good. And Logan Gilbert's coming off the IL, so that's an interesting setup there for me with regards to Boston. But as far as DFS today, pitching is light, so I think it's going to be wide open slate. I think some people are even going to try to get cute and go with Dylan Cease against the Dodgers because he dominated them last time out. I like Clark Schmidt, Zach Eflin, and Ryan Pepiot at the top end. I want to pick on Carson Palmquist of the Rockies, of course. Jose Soriano going to Yankee Stadium is very scary, even though he's coming off of a great start. And JP Sears with your Houston Astros is another guy I want to pick on. So kind of a haves, have-nots type of board today. Should be wide open, though, because there are no definitively obvious starters to go with.
Last thing, Cleveland Guardians under was my favorite season win total before the season started. They have finally fallen to 500 now. I have them under 82.5, I believe it was. They finally fallen to 500 as their record starts to finally match their run differential. What do you think about that club moving forward? Are they going to finish above or below 500?
I think it is going to be below. I worried about the bullpen repeating, and I thought they would have enough starting pitching to make up for it this year. I've become concerned about that. It's really going to hinge on Ortiz, Ciccone, and Logan Allen.
Yeah, that's what I think. Paul, Always great to talk to you. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. Take care.
Paul Sporer at Sporer on Twitter. Check it out. We'll come back. We'll recap all the bets. It's a numbers game right here at VSiN.